It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The watchdog group Human Rights Watch says in a new report that Colombia and Panama, they failed to protect hundreds of thousands of migrants and asylum seekers crossing a treacherous jungle on their journey to the United States. We learn about the dangers of the Darien Gap and why Human Rights Watch predicts this passage could become more heavily traveled this year. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah McKinnon is a professor of rhetoric, politics, and culture at UW-Madison with expertise in U.S.-Mexico foreign policy and immigration. Sarah, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
The Darien Gap, we've heard it described as this dense jungle, roadless jungle. Why is this area becoming a focus of immigration policy debate in the U.S.?
The primary reason is that it's increasingly become the only path that individuals have as they're seeking pathways for residence, for movement and residence, that increasingly individuals, especially in the Western Hemisphere, in the Americas, have to travel this pathway because other options are just not available. There aren't options to apply for a visa and move in a regular way. And so this form of irregular transit is just increasingly just the only option that individuals have.
And last year, more than 520,000 people moved through the region, and those are numbers collected from the Panamanian government. What is causing this recent surge in crossings?
So I would say it's not necessarily a recent surge. For the last 3 years, every year, there's an increase in the amount of individuals crossing through the Darien Gap. I think it's helpful to look at the foreign policy collaborations that create the landscape of law and policy that make it just challenging for individuals to have other options. So, for example, in 2021, from pressure from the United States, Mexico implemented visa restrictions for Venezuelan individuals. So that meant that if you were from Venezuela, you could no longer just fly to Mexico with your passport. You needed a travel visa, a tourist visa. And of course, that's really challenging in contexts where perhaps there are no embassies to apply for a visa. And also, the visas take a long time and many people are denied. And so post 2021, we saw a really significant increase in Venezuelan individuals who were using the Darien Gap to cross through Mexico to hopefully, I think for many, apply for asylum in the United States. And so those sorts of policy implications then play out in the lives of individuals. We can see this also with the Los Angeles Agreement in 2022, which was another collaboration between states of the region. And those policies, while in some ways opened pathways for regular migration, also made irregular migration more and more challenging and forced many individuals through the Darien Gap region.
And that's what I wonder, Sarah, like how much cross-border collaboration is there between the U.S. And Colombia and Panama specifically to curb this migration through the Darien Gap? These countries know what is going on here. Is there any type of effective cooperation at hand?
Yeah, there is. And the cooperation is, I think, really innovative in a lot of ways. So last year in 2023, we saw President Biden working in collaboration with many governments of the region to implement what are called safe mobility offices. So at these offices, individuals can apply for refugee resettlement. They can apply for humanitarian parole visas, family reunification visas. There's a number of options for regular pathways. The offices are available right now in Colombia, Ecuador, and Guatemala, and Costa Rica. So I believe there are four countries right now. And it's been a year, so it's hard to see, a significant shift. But this is a way in which we can see governments working together to try to find safer ways for individuals to move and to seek residence in safe places. And yet, those pathways are not available to everyone. So, for example, in Colombia, the safe mobility offices are available for Venezuelan nationals, Cuban nationals, and Haitian nationals. And what we know about movement through the Darien Gap is that it's actually quite a global phenomenon. There are individuals from Asian countries and African countries who make passage through that area, and they are not eligible in Colombia to wait and apply for those programs. And so while there is really fantastic coordination, it's really in some ways a drop in the bucket of the movement through that region of the world.
We're discussing immigration and the movement through the Darien Gap specifically with UW Madison Professor Sarah McKinnon. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff in Delafield is here. Jeff, hi, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. It sounds like a lot of these immigrants or migrants, whatever, are coming from the country of Venezuela. What are we doing to equip them to maybe change their situation in Venezuela to make things better there? My understanding is that Venezuela is an elected government where they, in theory, should have a chance to change things for the better. And, you know, I thought it was a government of the people, kind of a socialistic utopian type of government, but why is that not working?
Jeff, thank you for that question. Sarah, what about these root causes?
Jeff, that's a really fantastic question, and I think you're providing an answer in the question itself, which is to really focus on creating a reason for individuals to stay. The reality for Venezuelans right now is that it's really not possible to remain in country, but that doesn't mean it can't be the case in the future. And so really thinking about strengthening democratic processes, strengthening the context of security in a country like Venezuela, I think could go a really long way to addressing the flow of individuals, the movement of individuals that we're seeing. I mean, it is the case that currently 7 million Venezuelans live outside of the country, 3 million, almost 3 million in Colombia alone. And Colombia has done really fantastic things to provide the capacity for Venezuelans to remain there. But if the context where one is living, is not safe, if there are dynamics of insecurity that make that hard to remain there, of course we're going to see further movement. That's just one of the dynamics that's present with human migration flows.
You recently wrote in the conversation that the entire route through the Darien Gap is controlled by criminal organizations that make millions of dollars guiding people, smuggling people. Why are these groups allowed to thrive?
I mean, the Darien Gap, I think it's really important to keep in mind what that area is like. It's a dense jungle. And so there are no roads through the Darien Gap, this 60-mile stretch that crosses both Colombia and Panama. And so that makes it really hard to regulate the activity of criminal organizations. If there's no infrastructure for like security folks, for even humanitarian organizations to be present in that space, it makes it really challenging also to maintain people's safety. And the reports recently are really alarming. The individuals that I spoke with and the reports that I see from humanitarian organizations demonstrate there are alarming amounts of sexual assault, mass sexual assault that is happening as people move through that area. People are robbed pretty constantly. And also the landscape and the fact of being in a jungle also makes that stretch really, really dangerous. At least that part, I mean, I think it's really challenging to think about what would control, what would regulation of that space even look like in that context. The Panama has implemented what they're talking about as controlled flow, which is basically when individuals arrive at they're basically like camps or stopping grounds on the other side of the really dense forest. The Panamanian government is then putting individuals on buses, and then they move to the next northern border. And so, yeah, that dynamic, I think it's really challenging to think about how you would make it, how would you make it less dangerous when, the context is so inhospitable.
Sarah McKinnon with us, UW-Madison professor, researches immigration and refugee issues, gender violence as well, as we discuss the complexities of the Darien Gap migration route from Colombia to Panama in hopes of reaching the United States. Call in with the question. You can share your perspective at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the humanitarian crisis unfolding in the Darien Gap as migrants and asylum seekers cross a jungle's challenging terrain in hopes of making it to the U.S. southern border. UW-Madison professor Sarah McKinnon is with us, interviewed some of these migrants, shares her experiences. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can add your views at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah, can you talk about the people who have journeyed through the Darien Gap and what you learned from their experiences?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that always stands out as I speak with individuals about their experience of moving through that jungle area is just, I mean, just how many aspects of danger there really are. I mean, it is the criminal organizations that control the area. It is the mud and the mountains and the days and days of walking and carrying children or carrying one's belongings. It's the lack of cell phone service as people enter the dense forest. And so that always really stands out in the conversations. I also think it's important to recognize that many individuals that ultimately might make this journey, this pathway through the jungle, ultimately perhaps didn't really think that they would first do that. Maybe they tried to seek residence in Colombia first. Maybe they tried to find a residence in another country. And so for many individuals that I speak with, it's really clear that movement is necessary because of the climate in one's home country. And so they leave searching for a safer place. And if it's not safe in the next country, they keep on moving, right? And so that dynamic, I think, is really important. For many individuals, it's not necessarily the goal to come to the United States or Canada, but that increasingly becomes the idea as the only option that potentially could be safe and feel comfortable.
In terms of safety, does the remoteness of the Darien Gap make female migrants especially vulnerable to violence, to exploitation, other risks when crossing this area?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In December of 2023, the Doctors Without Borders reported that one person was sexually assaulted every 3.5 hours while crossing the Darien Gap. And recently, the Panamanian government did not renew the contract with Doctors Without Borders, who were basically the only humanitarian organization working in that area. And that, I think, is really significant. It means that individuals who are moving through the jungle do not have access to even basic medical care. And it also means that the women and children and even men who experience sexual assault are not getting attention for that either. It's a really dire situation.
And you study gendered dynamics of migration. So this area must be, you know, very significant to that piece of your research.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, we know from decades of research that sexual assault is used as a form of power and control and even torture and genocide. Those phenomenon, I think, are absolutely well documented. And I would say that the same phenomenon is happening in this context.
It also makes me wonder, as you think about people trying to get to the southern border, but I also wonder, is it possible for migrants to find a safer place to live and not have to cross the Darien Gap or multiple countries just to get to the United States?
Yeah, and that is, I mean, we see those programs available. So the program that I mentioned, where Venezuelans can remain in Colombia and seek permanent resident, get work permits, that's a really important program to think about. We can also see it in Mexico. Mexico has been a receiver country for a number of nationals, a number of communities. It's important to look at the logistics of who it qualifies. So, for example, in Colombia, if you're Venezuelan, there are opportunities, but if you are from Cameroon, for example, or from Afghanistan, there may be less opportunities to stay. And so, I think we really need to think about how to take seriously the global nature of migration through the Americas, because for many of those individuals, the only option is to keep moving. The only option is to really continue in this really irregular, dangerous path.
I also wonder how militarized are the borders in these various countries, whether it is different from country to country.
It is different from country to country, and for many of the countries through Central America, the idea is to keep moving them forward. And so that's where things like the Panamanian government putting people on buses to then move them to Costa Rica as quickly as possible. That's one of those dynamics. And you see that through many of the countries in Central America. Once they arrive in Mexico, the context is a little different. So many individuals will arrive in the area of Chiapas, the state of Chiapas. Tapachula is the city that where many individuals arrive. And at that point, people can apply for refugee status in Mexico, but they need to remain, as I understand it, in the state where they're applying for that. And so that means that there's a lot of concentration of people who were in movement, but now are remaining in Tapachula and that or in Chiapas, and that then creates other dynamics of insecurity and just problems with violence. And that's true throughout the context of Mexico.
And even a competition to like find a job or get established or
Absolutely.
find social service. I mean, all of that would be completely taxed if you have such a condensed area.
Absolutely. And that I would say is true in many of the countries where there are programs to remain or programs to seek permanent residence. The other dynamic is that there just are not stable jobs. So individuals may find, kind of a job here and there that maybe pays them for a week or pays them for a month, and then they don't have a job after that. And they're not well-paying enough to create a home somewhere. And so the dynamic of having access to work enough that is stable, work enough that pays enough to make a home is also really significant when we look at new receiver countries like Colombia or Mexico. That dynamic, I think, is also a factor that we need to think about as something that could be addressed through policy. It could be addressed through programs.
And in our final moments together, Sarah, are there any particular policies that could drastically curb migration through the Darien or even possibly bring it to an end?
I mean, I think the dynamic of the safe mobility offices that I mentioned is really significant and innovative, and more could be done. The idea with that is that individuals go through the processing, either for refugee resettlement or for the other visa programs, in a country like Colombia or Costa Rica, and they wait there until they have the visa, and then that allows them to go to the United States, or Canada actually is another one of the receiver countries, or Spain actually. So I think augmenting that program could be really significant, and especially thinking about countries, nationals other than just Venezuela and Haiti and Cuba as applicable for those programs.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah McKinnon is a professor of rhetoric, politics, and culture at UW-Madison. Research involves immigration and refugee issues and gender-based violence. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.